hanging at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Friday, Cofield and Company from Parts Unknown. Treasure Island is the setting here on Friday. It's our Friday home. Adam Hill by in just a couple minutes. It's Steve Cofield on the road, covering the final UNLV road game of the season, the regular season. Who knows what happens in the Mountain West Conference Tournament and beyond. DeMond is back in the Finley Toyota studios. Much to get to. We got a great guest spots coming up this hour, including a UNLV football conversation with the center, Jack Haas, in just a couple minutes. Michael Venom Page, big fight weekend. We'll get to that in a couple of minutes as he makes his debut. And towards the end of the hour, some convo out of Denver. Really needed to get on the ground in Denver. Judge Dan's going to join us to talk about Russell Wilson and Justin Simmons. All right, Tamon, what's going on, buddy?
Nothing much, Steve. It's a fun day where there's always so much to talk about, and it's the weekend.
Yes.
But I'm excited for the game this weekend.
Yes. Big game, and we'll break it down a lot as the show moves along. In enemy territory, they're all razzed up, and it could be for second place in the conference, which is pretty incredible. I didn't think the Wolfpack were that good. And listen, when the Rebels were sitting at 2-4, it's like, all right, well, let's see if they can get back to respectability. They went way beyond that, and they're sitting at 12-5 in conference. So this weekend is the lead up, the last couple of days, and I think we're going to get some rumors out. This is going to be a crazy rumor mill weekend about free agency. Legal tampering on Monday. Free agency officially begins on Wednesday. Give me a prediction for something wild that comes out on Sunday or on the first day of the legal tampering.
I don't have anything wild. I just went with what where my heart wanted to go. Derrick Henry signs back with the Titans.
Okay, well, hey, you know what? That's kind of wild because you've got an all-time great running back. I would think that someone would want a battering ram like him for certain power offenses and that he would get a better deal than maybe Tennessee would offer. I'm also going to go with the running back. And in a way, if running back news is some of the biggest stuff Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, that is kind of shocking because the league has spent so many years, and especially this offseason, kind of downplaying what the running back is, and you're feeling bad for all these running backs. I think, well, I'll give you two options. It could be running back. I think something will happen on Monday or Tuesday with a signing where the league fans are like, wait a second, the rich get richer? How do the Chiefs or Eagles do this? And I'm not talking about Legarius Sneed. I guess I'll throw in Chris Jones because it seems like Chris Jones is going to have to take a big discount to stay around. But you watch. Somehow the Chiefs will sign him to a market rate deal and be like, what? How did this happen? And the team that I hope surprises people, because Howie Roseman's another one of those guys, the GM of the Eagles, where you're like, because remember the draft last year, it's like, how many Georgia guys is he going to get? How many guys are going to have slipped to him on that defensive line? This time, instead of going bargain basement, and I'm talking bargain basement, could be like Austin Eckler for $6 million. I think that we'll jump in and be competitive at the high end of the running back market. Watch them land Saquon Barkley within the division for close to market value. And people are going to be like, they don't have any room. How are they getting Saquon Barkley? Because that's what the good teams in the NFL do when it comes to the cap.
But if you want to poke a hole in that, could you say that the fact that they are getting Saquon Barkley means that they know that their offensive line won't be as strong without Jason Kelce? So maybe that's a little hole in the armor there?
Yeah. I mean, that's a good counter, that they actually need someone better. They just can't go, we'll throw anyone back there. Now, I don't love Barkley. I don't think he's the top of the market. I think Josh Jacobs is. Wouldn't that be a hoot if the Eagles signed Josh Jacobs?
When I see even the Josh Jacobs reports of, hey, he would love to play in Chicago, even I'm getting a little defensive of, he wouldn't fit there. He doesn't want to go to Chicago. It's all a smokescreen. He's coming back to the Raiders.
Someone is going to pay him. He deserves it. And I'm not saying he's not getting $15, $17 million a year. These aren't the days of Henry when he got his deal or Zeke or McCaffrey. It'll be a reduced deal, but Jacobs is going to be right at the top of the list. So interesting news in the NBA. Phoenix is getting the NBA All-Star Game in 2027. I thought that could be the year that actually Vegas could get it. But, you know, 2028 works. All-Star Weekend. Yay, Las Vegas. Guess what, everybody? Here's the announcement. They're getting a team. 2030 or 2031. Kind of makes sense, right?
It would make sense. But, Steve, when I put this in my stories, what I really wanted was a story. Because all we always hear about how bad the All-Star game was when it was here in Vegas. Was it really that bad?
It was bad.
Okay.
It was bad. Not to try to demean you. You were how old in 2007?
11, yes.
Okay. So you have no recollection of it?
No.
It was just we got overrun with the crowd size, and it's still hard to understand how we couldn't handle the event. We're so much better at handling mega events some 17 years later. So there will be a lot of chatter. When this thing is announced, another All-Star game, in advance of a team coming here, there are going to be a lot of people who have the battle scars from 2007. Like, we don't want those fans here. It was bad. We just didn't beef up security enough. It was a freaking wild crowd. There was some violence. There was a lot of dining and dashing. The other thing is, you know, I don't know the difference. We'd have to look it up. What the room total here is, I think we're pushing like 157,000 rooms. I don't think it was that much lower. Like, could it have been like 120? Maybe? But there actually, it didn't seem like either there weren't enough rooms that weekend or people just said, you know what, we're not paying. And they just kind of hung out in the casinos. You'd have people sleeping in the casinos, but the dine and dash stuff was bad and people were kind of looking to throw and start trouble. So when it comes back, Vegas will be much more prepared. And that'll be the launching point for our team.
Because after this All-Star game in Indianapolis, the NBA did put out a set of requirements that All-Star cities needed to have going forward. And
it was very low, wasn't it, with the rooms?
Yes.
Like, you had to have like 30,000 rooms.
It wasn't, the biggest, leap to, jump over. But it's still one of those things where I see that, and no shade at Phoenix, but when's Vegas going to get on the list? They already given us the in-season tournament. We know we're getting a team eventually. Maybe it'll be in conjunction with the team.
Yeah, I think they're waiting. Big fight weekend. We'll get to the boxing match a little later in the show, but we've got UFC 299. And, Damon, I've heard a lot of people argue, and we're going to talk to Michael Venom Page in just a couple minutes. I've heard a lot of people argue they actually like 299 better than, one of these benchmark events, another 100 event, UFC 300. So do you buy that? Do you like UFC 299 that much?
Yes, Steve, I buy it. So this card is stacked. Maybe, let's say, the early prelims don't have ranked fighters, but even on the early prelims, there is another guy making his long-awaited debut, Robles. He's a Cuban heavyweight, and he's making his debut. And that's something that's on the early prelims that people are even going to be tuned in
I've
to
see. I've seen highlights of him. Taekwondo guy?
Yes.
Holy crap. At that size?
6'7", the longest reach in UFC history.
Weren't the last three fights like 25 seconds combined?
Yes. This guy's incredible. Hello. And this is the early prelims. And it's Miami. I went to the Miami card last year. It was phenomenal. Miami, last year, because I'm looking around, I'm talking to locals, and people say, hey, don't worry. Miami people, they get in late. Because I'm looking around, hey, the main card's about to start. Where's everybody? This year, don't do that, Miami. Get there early.
Remember, every day we're giving away $2,024. Today's qualifying code word is shrimp, like a shrimp cocktail. Shrimp. All you got to do to be in the running to win $2,024 is text our text line, 702-364-1100, 702-364-1100. Code word today to hit the jackpot, qualify for it to win $2,024. The code word is shrimp. Up next, Damon's going to help us preview UFC 300 with that guy we mentioned that's making a debut, Michael Venom Page.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island.
Back here, Cofield and Company. Steve Cofield in Reno. We're stationed at Treasure Island as well. We were just talking about the big fight card this weekend with UFC 299. So Damon had a chance to talk to Michael Venom Page. We're going to get to that in just a second. But let's give away some Mountain West Conference tournament tickets. 364-1100, 364-1100. Caller number 7. It's tickets for next Friday. The tournament actually starts up with the women on the 10th. The tournament goes the 10th to the 16th at the Thomas and Mack Center. It's Mountain West Conference basketball tournament here in town at the T&M. You can buy your tickets at themw.com or unlvtickets.com. We've also got you a chance to win VIP tickets, all session VIP tickets. But these are two tickets right now for the Mountain West Conference Basketball Tournament. 364-1100, caller number 7. So Damon got a chance to sit down with Michael Page, who is making his debut with the USC against Kevin Holland, and started off the conversation asking, how did this whole thing come together?
Obviously, it happened relatively quickly, to be fair, because we were still in negotiations of the UFC. And obviously, while we were, that was going on in the background, they were asking, you know, like, you know, we had a meeting about what type of fighters you see yourself fighting. They put a few names forward. And then UFC, with regards to, you know, fight shows and fights and injuries and this and that, it's a moving division. Nothing's ever stationary. Nothing's ever scheduled. And I had a feeling that, you know, Kevin's that guy, that he would put his hand up and like, yo, I'm fighting this guy. Let me test him first. So we had a feeling that it would potentially be him. And then we just got my manager messaged me saying it's Kevin, and we just got straight to work.
So when you find out it's Kevin, are you excited, or is it, I don't care who I'm fighting? Or do you like that you were fighting, your opponent's nickname is Big Mouth, and you're going to be able to sell this fight, and it's going to be an exciting fight that fans want to see?
Honestly, yeah, it adds to the sale, but I don't care who I fight, though, because for me, I feel like I deliver that anyway. If the guy across the way is not selling it, I'll sell it myself.
Yeah, for those that are unfamiliar, you have impressive knockouts and the celebrations. How far ahead in advance do you plan these celebrations? The most famous one being the Pokeball that you rolled out.
So talking about the Pokeball, that happened 4 days before the actual event. Pokemon Go just landed literally that week of the fight. Me and my family was all playing it. And we sat around with my family. We were just talking. My family are a big inspiration to me because all of us are jokers. We love to crack jokes on each other and just, you know, have that back and forth. And we were just cracking. And my brother was like, yo, that guy you're fighting, he sounds like a Pokemon. And we just started laughing, like, da-da-da. And he's like, yo, wouldn't it be sick if you da-da-da? And we were joking. And then by the end of it, we're like, no, we have to do that. So we were just out on the town just trying to find Pokeball hat, all that kind of stuff to make it happen. And I only actually got given the Pokeball, it's a long story, but I only got given the Pokeball 15 minutes before I was about to walk. Otherwise, that wouldn't have happened. So, I let these things come to me at different times, depending on how I'm feeling, depending on, you know, what we talk about. I try not to force it too much. I think it's better when it just, you know, it lands naturally.
Again, we're talking to Michael Venom Page. I've got to ask you, that part of being a showman, do you think that that's necessary to build up that brand? Because you are you were one of the most entertaining fighters outside of the UFC. And I think that groundswell of, we want to see him in the UFC, that just helped because how you build yourself and your brand.
Yeah, I always, even when I'm speaking to some of my teammates, I always try to remind them that you are your brand. That's the difference here. You are not selling a different thing. You are your brand. You have to take into consideration things you say, how you say it, how well you say it, things you do, how well you do it, how memorable are you. There's a show with like 16 bouts. So what makes you stand out specifically? If I'm a new person, my friend just asked me to come to a UFC event or an MMA event, I've never been to any before in my life, what is going to make me at the end of this come back and be like, oh, the guy that did that thing, da-da-da-da? Because people will struggle with names straight away. Mm-hmm. But if I give them something else to attach to, they will eventually keep doing their research. And yeah, 100% branding and is a big thing in general, but massively important for me. And I see the importance of it.
And you've said coming into the UFC that you didn't need any tune-up fights. You didn't want to, you know, let's just feel it out. Throw me right into the deep end. You see that with Kevin Holland. So where do you see your progression going? Presumably you get the win against Kevin Holland. Where does that track you for your UFC career?
Yeah, you know, what a great start. It answers a big question that's been looming over my head for a long time with how well will he do in the UFC. And I know for a fact, if I came here and I had, you know, an okay fighter, the question would still continue. So let's answer it straight away and then we go from there. Let me solidify myself. Let me make that grand first impression, and then we move from there. Because then I demand respect from everybody. I put everybody else in the division on notice and have them worried about an additional headache to deal with in that division.
you are a unique welterweight, especially with your size and frame, but Kevin Holland of similar size. But for those, for the uninitiated, what about your style is unexpected? I would say almost a little unorthodox, even though you are a true martial artist.
Again, it's just, it's where the style comes from. The style comes from freestyle kickboxing, which not many people are tapped into, to be fair. The likes of Wonderboy Thompson has that kind of background, and you see how effective, you know, his striking is. The likes of Raymond Daniels, and you see how effective his striking is. But very few outside of us have crossed over successfully to a full contact sport, because it is a light contact sport, so to speak. But it's based on speed element. And I think that is the key here. So many stand-up striking arts are based on the power element, whereas we are based on the movement, the in and out, and the speed and the timing. And it gives us something special when we get in the cage. And, you know, if done right, it's also equally as devastating.
Do you think that people maybe underestimate your skills as a complete mixed martial artist at times because of how effective and, let's say, astounding your kickboxing background is?
100%. Because I am so, you know, by way of balance, and I always say, you know, some of the toughest fighters to deal with are the ones that are the most balanced. So, let's say out of 10, their striking is a 5, their wrestling is a 5, and their jiu-jitsu is a 5, they can be the most difficult, you know. But for me, my striking is 10, you know. it makes it that much so that the difference between the two different arts or the other arts is so grand. People just assume that, yeah, he doesn't have that in his locker. Oh, I definitely do. But it's just not to the level and to the scale of my striking.
All right. Michael Venom Page, UFC 299, this Saturday, March 9th, Kaseya Center, Miami, taking on Kevin Holland, welterweight division. Anything else you want to say to promote this fight?
Nah, man, just tune in. Don't blink, because the show's going to be special, because MVP's in town now.
There he is, Michael Venom Page, talking to Damon. We'll step aside real quick here. Remember, the card is tomorrow, UFC 299 on pay-per-view.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island.
Cofield and Company back here on a Friday. UNLV football is on spring break after a week of spring practice. I had a chance to catch up with the returning center on offense, and that is Jack Haas, and we started off the conversation mentioning the end of the last practice and the message through a few practices from head coach Barry Odom.
You know, especially going into break right now, just all the work we've put in at this point in camp, we can't have diminishing returns. So it's nice that we get a little break in the middle, but at the same time, we got to come back ready and build on what we've done already.
So what happens for spring break? Does a lot of the team go out of town? Are you planning on going out of town? Do you guys just kind of batten down the hatches? Like, we can't go and travel?
Everybody's different. Obviously, we have a lot of local guys in Vegas or California, you know, close around, where it's kind of driving distance and more manageable. Personally, I'm visiting my sister. I'm kind of utilizing the break a little bit, taking a little mental and physical break. But it depends. A lot of people like to stick around and perfect their craft, but it depends who you are.
So you mentioned been here, and a lot of the group has been here. I mean, there's a lot of continuity here. You lost Trigg Wright, but beyond that, it's a lot of guys are back, and a lot of guys got rotational time last year. So how big is that going? Does it feel different this time in terms for you and the others? Like, hey, we've got a regular group now.
It definitely feels different. Something we stress, especially on the offensive line, and I think that kind of sets us apart from last year, is versatility within the group. Like myself, I played guard and center this break, or this spring ball, excuse me. Another guy like Austin Boyd, young guy who got experience as a freshman. He's very versatile, especially in the middle three. Guys like Marcus Miller, who can play all five. So it's just, it builds a lot of competition, which is really good. And it also, you know, kind of enables you to trust people at different spots.
All right, new look quarterback room. Cam Friel is back, but Haj Malik Williams is in. So give me your early impressions of Haj Malik, from a playing standpoint.
Mm-hmm. What impresses me the most with Haj is, I mean, it sounds cliche, but just he's a player once he gets out there. You know, obviously he knows the game from a mental standpoint, but there's different plays, whether it be a busted scheme or a broken play, he's going to find a way to put the ball downfield, put it in the best position he can. So I think that's something that can really help him. He's mobile too, so it's easier to block for guys like that, for sure.
It's kind of what Barry Odom had said the other day about, you know, once he's on the field, he kind of, you see it blossom. What's he like as a leader in terms of communication?
As far as, you know, my playing years, he's one of my favorite quarterbacks as far as immediate feedback, whether it be a snap, whether it be the tackle messing up, a slide protection. He gives you that immediate feedback, which, you know, at the time isn't always exactly what you want to hear, but it's what you need to hear, and he's really good at that.
All right, so give me your impression across the way and what you're facing. Because one, Tad Martinson's back. I mean, this guy's a walk-on from the past, and he continues to hold on, you know, rotationally, you know, that spot in the middle. So what's special about him, and have you seen a little bit of growth with him?
I definitely have. And he's another guy, even going back a year from now, last spring ball, I think he's made huge improvements to his game. Obviously, big body, hard to move, great work ethic to him, too. So, yeah, I mean, he's a guy that always improves. I think schematically he fits what our defense is looking for as well. So, I mean, he's a guy that is definitely going to make an impact.
They have a new big fella on defense in Clay Patterson, you know, who looks to be, what, 6'3", 300 pounds. So what's your early impression with him?
Yeah, he's got a motor for sure. It's very impressive just kind of how he operates, especially, as you alluded to, 300 pounds. And, you know, doesn't seem like he gets tired. Real active feet, really active hands. And then I think he'll be a really good player for us.
How about the mentality of the team? I guess, I don't know, I was a little surprised by hearing both Barry Odom, and I shouldn't be surprised, Barry Odom and Michael Scheer say, you know what, last year wasn't good enough. Because for a lot of people in Vegas, we're like, hey, 9 wins, bowl game, that's great. Has that kind of been the message to everyone? Like, hey, it's got to be better.
Most definitely. And, you know, I think a part of that is just growing as a program too. Obviously, Coach Odom and the rest of the staff getting here when I did last January, so a little over a year from now. And, you know, it's great to see that the things have turned around a little bit, but at the same time, we know what we can do and we know what we could have done if we would have, you know, finished the season a little bit better. And we know it's very possible, so that's the goal this year.
What do you personally have to do better?
Just be the leader up front, honestly. It's, you know, my last year of ball, so guys like Boyd, guys like Will Thomas, younger guys, take them along with me and lead from the front.
Jack Haas, the center for UNLV football. We have a lot more audio from UNLV football coverage up at Steve Cofield, up at UNLV All Access on Twitter. On the way back, we're going to get the latest update on what's going on in a very tumultuous Denver Broncos situation with Judge Dan from The Fan.
Hanging at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Back here on a Friday, Treasure Island is the site. Cofield up in Reno as we're getting ready for Nevada and UNLV. And Judge Dan drops in from The Fan in Denver. We got a lot to talk about with the cut of Justin Simmons. I almost called him Russell Simmons. And then Russ is gone, Russell Wilson. So we'll talk about Russell Wilson and the future of the Broncos. Clearly the worst organization, the worst team in the AFC West. But with Dan Jacobs from The Fan, we always talk food. And I saw a very intriguing picture on your Twitter stream of a pizza. What was that pizza?
Yeah, it was trippy, man. It's tie-dye glitter pizza. And it was fantastic because we ordered that from Hungry Howie's. It was under the secret, top secret section. And I didn't tell anybody I bought it. And so my 16-year-old opened up the box and she was like, oh, what is this? And it's pretty sightly. So it was a neat treat to have. It's pretty crazy.
Tastes like traditional pizza. No issue. Nothing. No.
Yeah. Yeah. But everybody's like, should I eat this? It's, I don't know, but it's just cheese pizza.
All right. Always trying to trick the family. He says on his Twitter account that he's a nice guy. I'm not so sure when you treat the kids like that. All right, let's get into treating the kids the way the Broncos have and the reaction this week in general to Wilson essentially going bye-bye early in the week, but then Justin Simmons getting cut. And I would assume there are a lot of Broncos fans who are like, what the hell is happening?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting your kind of thinly veiled comments there when, you know, the Raiders players essentially have to rise up and tell the owner what to do as far as the coach. So I appreciate your comments there, Mr. Cofield. We actually have an adult in the room. Our coaches actually, you know, get to make decisions. The players don't have to do it for the team. So that's what's going on here. Like, for far too long, we had – just chaos with the lack of real ownership and a lack of real direction. John Elway was up in the office playing golf half the day and not really knowing what to do. And so now there's a new sheriff in town. His name is Sean Payton. The roster was a mess. Justin Simmons simply was making way too much money. He's on the wrong side. I mean, on the wrong side of, you know, the age spectrum, so to speak. He's going to be 30 years old. He's making $14 million. It cost you nothing to cut him. And so that's what they decided to do. They're going to get rid of bad contracts. And they didn't do that necessarily before. And now they're going to do that. They're going to purge those contracts from the roster, and they're going to move forward appropriately.
Do you believe Simmons is on the wrong side? Was his play declining?
Well, he had been here. It wasn't necessarily declining, but for your value for the dollar and where they're going to be. So you're going to pay him $14 million next year. Are they going to be a serious Super Bowl contender? The answer is no. So is that money well spent then? The answer is probably no.
Were there any people in the market, media or fans, who were blaming the cut of Justin Simmons on the way Russell Wilson was handled?
Yeah, I mean, that's the knee-jerk reaction is always going to be, oh my God, they have to do this because of, you know, the Russell Wilson contract. Well, there was a little bit of that, but the answer is, honestly, they just need to start doing roster building the right way. The approach was always, I don't know if you remember the quote, but John Elway's like, oh, we're going with plan A, which is always to win right now. Well, I call it the three little piggies approach, right? Oh, how are you going to build your house? Is it going to be out of sticks and straws? We're always trying to like, oh, we're going to go get Case Keenum. We're going to go get Joe Flacco. We're going to go get Russell Wilson. All these aging quarterbacks to prop up your house with sticks and straws. Or are you going to build it like the third little pig with a foundation? Because the big bad wolf is Patrick Mahomes, and he's going to blow your house down. And he has. And their house has been built, it's a paper tiger. It has not been built on a strong foundation. It's a bad roster. And they're finally, it looks like, going to try and build a strong foundation, a good roster, but they're going to have to find a quarterback. And unfortunately, you guys hoodwinked him somehow, this organization somehow, into Jared Stidham. And right now they keep talking about Jared friggin' Stidham, which is driving me crazy because he's going to be the starter next year as of right now.
Judge Dan, one of the hosts on The Fan in Denver, reacting to a very busy week around Broncos land with cuts of Justin Simmons and then the gigantic name at the beginning of the week with Russell Wilson. Where's the fan base on the cut of Wilson? Are they 90% in support? Do some of them look at it like, hey, why not just keep him around? The cap hit is going to get you, even if he's a bridge quarterback to a rookie, or most on Peyton's side?
It's weird. Everybody hates Sean Payton, but that doesn't necessarily mean, I mean, he's a jerk. I mean, he is an a-hole of the first caliber, man. Like, wow. It is weird. I didn't know that when we were getting the guy. I just thought, hey, good coach, had a good run in New Orleans, won a Super Bowl. Man, he is a first class, you know what. But that doesn't mean he's necessarily doing a bad job. But the fan base really does not like Sean Payton. But that doesn't mean they recognize, they also don't recognize that Russell Wilson was washed up. So we can't wait for you guys to sign him. Good luck with him. You guys do need a quarterback out there in Las Vegas. And why wouldn't you guys sign him? I mean, you need him, right?
They could need a bridge, but it depends on what they do in the draft. I mean, they could be aggressive like the Broncos, and we'll get to that, and move up in the draft. I would be in favor of trading for a younger guy and just start moving forward with pick a young guy and give him the contract. But I also saw that Wilson has been kind of getting killed in terms of being a leader. And a lot of people have come out of the woodwork and say, hey, he can't temper his attitude. He can't just blend in. Carl Mecklenburg, a Broncos legend, went off on Wilson saying he isn't a leader. Did you find that?
He wanted to be a leader. He tried to be a leader, but it was inauthentic, I think. He's like the guy that tried to follow me, everybody follow me, I'll lead you. But it was, nobody wanted to, like, people time and time again, there was a no name. I think it was Mike Purcell. Most people never heard of, like, a journeyman lucky to be in the NFL on a roster at any given time defensive lineman that came off the field at one point and just shouted him down. Like, nobody trusted Russell Wilson. And so he would talk a good game, but nobody would follow him. That was the problem. He wanted to be that guy, but one, he couldn't play. And when you can't play, they're not going to follow you. And then two, he was just, we call it, I think the best word that we came up with to describe him was cringy, right? He was just cringy. He was just, he wanted to be cool. He wanted to be a leader. He just wasn't. And then he came off as corny and cringy. And then, of course, he had his charity kind of scandal that really came off poorly, where he was just, his charity came out to be like a slush fund to pay his work, people that were working for his brand. That was really sad, because I think he is a good guy and he does a lot of good things, but then you can't have your charity be a slush fund. So it was just an unmitigated disaster. 11-19 as a starter here, when you come in and you're talking about winning championships and Super Bowls. Again, and not a bad guy, just a disaster as a quarterback here.
So now reports are out there that the Giants and Steelers may be looking at him. You mentioned the Raiders. Nothing's come out officially on the Raiders, but the intriguing part here, if he does have anything left, is that he's going to get $39 million from the Broncos, and essentially you have to pay him nothing. So I'll ask you, what would you tell Giants and Steelers fans about getting a Russell Wilson who may be humbled? Is there a possibility, as he's looking at the end of the road here, that he could turn the corner? What would you tell those organizations?
No, because that's what they tried to do this year. And he tried. Like, he tried to humble himself. The problem was, when they throttled him down this year, he just held onto the ball too long and got sacked and fumbled, and he was inaccurate, and it just didn't work. They had a little stretch there where they won some games, but you're not going to go anywhere, deep into the playoffs and be a serious football team with him. He's just washed up. You'll win a few games, but you're not going to be a serious contender with him. The Broncos tried it. They did everything they could. You saw the very first Raiders game, for example, right? I use that as a microcosm of what you get with Russell Wilson, right? They tried it. Russell Wilson had a chance to drive down and beat the Raiders. What did they have to do? They punted. And then you guys had a chance and you ran the ball out, and that was it. Like, that's it in a nutshell. When you try and play close to the vest with a Russell Wilson team, and he's just washed up. That's what I would tell them.
Judge Dan is with us. Dan Jacobs from The Fan in Denver. It's Cofield and Company here on a Friday. Is news developing all week about Russell Wilson. All right. So we're very interested here in the division rival and what the future plan is. What do you think the future plan is? You're kind of cracking on Jared Stidham. Is it draft someone and get a bridge? Is it just go straight draft someone, maybe move up in the draft, and then you have more confidence in starting that quarterback? Who's going to be the quarterback?
Well, what we're hearing right now is, yes, they are going to be as aggressive as possible trying to find in the draft a quarterback for the future, and that they are now going to try and remake the roster, which I don't know. My only issue was, why did they have to wait? Why did we have to suffer through last year with last year's crap players? Why did Sean Payton have to come in and waste a year? Why was that necessary? But they did, and you can't look back in the past, I guess. That's what Steve Cofield always says. Thank you,
yes,
Steve.
Yes.
But they're moving forward. They're going to remake the roster in Sean Payton's image. That's fine. So they're not going to compete for the AFC West, next year. It's basically going to be, I remember a famous John Gruden, and we're going to try and win. That's what the Broncos are going to try and do. And so they're going to try and get a young guy. Jared Stidham right now is going to be the starter, but they may bring in like a Sam Darnold or somebody like that to compete with him. Why are you laughing, Steve? What's funny about Jared Stidham?
I think Stidham is absurd. They need to get a more experienced bridge quarterback, but not pay them a lot. If you're going to get, like you mentioned, Sam Darnold, or if it's Jameis Winston, it better be economical. I guess my question on the, hey, they're going to be aggressive and try to move up, I think there's teams that are going to try to do that. So I think the price is going to be prohibitive. I'm not sure it's worth it, but that's only if you believe that the guys who will be available at 12, like Michael Penix, like Bo Nix, those types of guys, are even a good shot at 12. And I mean, you can get them, but are they reliable? So you're caught in this position, and the Raiders are right there with them. So it's a really hard decision. You have to love one of these guys to not be super aggressive and move up to try to get the top three.
Well, here's the problem too. And I'm telling you, the ego on this dude, it's a thing of beauty. I don't know if you saw the quote this week, Sean, or I guess it was last week, Sean Payton. Here's the nice thing about us. We think we're really good at evaluating quarterbacks, and we think the other people are not. They're not so good at it. But we are. We know how to pick quarterbacks. So, you know, the Raiders and everybody else can be fumbling around in the dark with a flashlight, but we know. Because, you know, look at Sean Payton's track record of drafting quarterbacks over the last 20 years, Steve. Tell me about it.
Well, you know, everything he hangs his hat on is Drew Brees. So we're going to find out if that was – kind of a Brady Belichick situation with less winning, but we're going to find out eventually if Sean Payton is a great coach or it was mostly Drew Brees.
Yeah, so that's the danger. Their hubris could really hamstring this franchise because they could go, hey, let's go find Trey Lance, for example. Something like that. They could spend a whole lot of capital, which they don't have a lot of because they had to make trades to get Russell Wilson and to get Sean Payton. So they already are a little hamstrung. And then they're going to spend more capital to move up to get some guy that they think, because they know what a real quarterback is. And then if it's, you know, Trey Lance or something, then they could be in real trouble.
Dan Jacobs is with us. He's a sports talk host in Denver, judge, attorney, also a pit master. I saw you tweet out something about another pit master setting up and giving lessons on how to barbecue ribs. Was that real?
Yeah, well, it's nice because, you know, a lot of these classes you can go to, like a restaurant or whatever, they'll charge like $150 to $300 to go learn how to barbecue ribs and brisket. And my buddy that it's called a Seat at the Table Barbecue. We were there at the place where we do the free meals and it was $20.
Holy
and
cow.
It shows you how to do the whole thing, how to make a rack of ribs, you know, if you want to do competition style or just for, you know, he did both, like how to make it for competition and how to do it just for your buddies at home. It was awesome.
So you personally must love that. Cause I'm sure with all, you know, pit masters, aspiring pit masters, you're always kind of learning from other people and, you know, stealing different things. Right. I mean, I would assume this is never a process that ends in terms of learning new technique and new spices and all that stuff.
Right. Absolutely. Like you're always, you know, you're always on TikTok learning how, you know, with all the other, you know, Taylor Swift fans learning how to, you know, use your air fryer on different recipes and stuff. So, you know, it's a lifelong process.
Same level of expertise. Yeah. Okay. I felt like your station went real hard on the popularity of Deion Sanders and
wanted
to capitalize on the CU momentum. So go ahead. what were you going to say?
Did you see the quote yesterday that I sent you?
I did not. What was it?
He tweeted out a quote yesterday morning, an inspirational quote. Let's not focus on material things and swiping our credit card and money. Let's focus on loving one another and respecting all this stuff. And I'm like, Deion Sanders, Coach Prime Time. Okay.
Turn the corner. What do you think? Yeah. Why do you think he's sending that out?
He's doing these inspirational quotes every day. Like he's, you know, the new, I don't know, Tony Robbins or whatever. I don't know what this is. It's just, I just, you know, it's fine if you want to do that, but you know, it's just, this is also the same guy whose son literally takes a watch, a bling filled watch, and taunts opposing players and fans in the stands right now. So it's like talking out of both sides of your mouth. So why, you know, it's just hypocrisy. That's all.
I wonder with Deion if he's had the epiphany now that college football is very transactional and his name, I mean, it matters a little bit, but in the end, because of NIL, a lot of it depends on the NIL budget you have, and maybe Colorado has something massive, or maybe it's underwhelming. I just wonder what his reaction is, because I thought he did well in the transfer portal, but, I mean, clearly by the odds makers, you sent me the board a couple of days ago from, I think it was FanDuel, with Colorado, you know, after, hey, 2 years of building the program, this guy's ready for the NFL, he's ready to take the Texas A&M job, and the FanDuel odds have Colorado as the 11th choice in the Big 12.
I know. Well, that, I think it's more not a question of the talent. It's just the coaching. They just they're afraid of the coaching. It's, you know, sadly, certain programs they don't develop players very well. If you looked at, and I know you did, Steve, because you were gloating with glee as to kind of some of the meltdowns, certain programs don't develop players very well, or they make poor coaching decisions. And Deion, Coach Prime, will have to show that they made a huge improvement in that this year, from year one to year two.
It's a developmental thing more for me, and that is part of that is coaching, but it simply takes time, you know, to develop offensive and defensive linemen. Plug and play does not really exist, even if you're getting veterans. You know, it's funny, I'm not comparing the two programs, but well, I kind of am, because UNLV turned over its roster now in 2 years to the tune of like 70 plus players. And you know, I was out there at spring practice this week, and I'm like, wow, okay, here's the offense. I'm like, familiar faces all over the place, right? And continuity matters very much. And I just don't know that Deion's going to have the continuity trying to bring in all the star power. I'm kind of disappointed that he's not looking at it as more of a long haul deal and recruiting more freshmen. That's a telltale sign that he's not going to be around for very long.
Well, he just wanted to, he's saying he has a formula, and X percentage is always going to be freshmen, but he wants to constantly bring in ready talent. And he thinks that formula is going to work. He's the first to try it. And so that's his formula. And we're going to see if it's going to work.
Yeah. I know you were looking at the conference. You didn't think it was that good. I think it's ridiculously deep, and it's going to be tough. I think a lot of people assumed, hey, going to the Big 12 from the Pac-12 is going to be easier. Like, no, it's not. You're bringing over some of the best Pac-12 programs, and there's a lot of good programs around Big 12 football. So the Deion adventure, I guess, will start up here in just a little bit with spring practice and then into the fall. So, Dan, we appreciate it.
Don't miss the fashion show, Steve.
Oh, what's going on there?
Well, first off, so his son's going to skip the first day of football stuff to go to Paris to be in a fashion show. Yeah. And so I think the team got jealous. So part of spring training, they're going to do a team fashion show where they do a catwalk and stuff. So,
okay.
So remember, don't focus on the material things and credit card swipes, but be sure and be there for the fashion show.
It'll be a fun adventure to follow. Dan, when are you on coming up this weekend? Or what's going on the fan?
Yeah, don't miss the Dan Jacobs show, 11 to 2 on Saturdays on Denver. You can, out there in Las Vegas, I'm sure you guys don't want to miss it. DenverSports.com. You can stream it or sign up for the weekend's podcast, of course. And the easy, like, Sunday morning edition of the show, as always, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. as well.
There he is, Dan Jacobs. We're live at Treasure Island here on this Friday. We come back with the Big Four.